This is a tape made especially for Kodiak Oral History Project for Alaska History, done on December 1st, 1994, by Jennifer Legacy with Ruth Breckberg. Okay, first question. How did you come to be in Kodiak?
I came a long, long time ago to visit, and I met my husband here, and then I got married.
So, what year was this?
This was in 1943, a long, long time ago. Mm-hmm. I came from Fairbanks. I was working there. This was during war years, and I was working there. I had this friend who was coming here, and I came along with her for a visit. And then when I met Swede, I didn't go back for many, many years. I mean, I never did go back until Rob, right, my son, and I finally went back to Fairbanks on a visit.
Right.
That was when he was about 15, so you see, it was a long time.
Okay. So it was the husband that got you to stay, and you were not coming here to visit other family.
Well, actually, I didn't even know him when I came. I met him when,
sure,
I came here. I came to visit my friend's friend, and we got married before they got married. She, too, got married, but
oh, wow,
at any rate, it was one of those things that happened. Very happy one for me.
All right. Okay. So that means you've been in Kodiak since 1943. And so what family do you currently have here?
There's just me. We had, my husband and I had three children, all of whom are living in other places. One in Anchorage, one in Washington, D.C., one in Honolulu. And I'm the only one who's here because we died 10 years ago. So there's just me. And a lot of friends, you know, now I really, I don't have to stay here. I mean, you know.
Sure.
But this is home, and I'm not going to leave.
You've got alternative family now here that would just have a fit, I'm sure, if you were to pack up.
Well, I never even think of it because I go on trips, but I like Kodiak very, very much.
All right. And so what did your husband do here?
He was a carpenter at that time, Navy base. And and he was until he retired. He was a carpenter.
Oh, I see. So when you came here, the war was going on at that time.
Yes, it was.
Do you recall exactly what was happening in Alaska at that time as far as the war was concerned when you arrived?
Well, actually, my friend, we were roommates in Washington, D.C., and she wanted to come to Alaska, and I had always wanted to come to Alaska. So we did. We went to our home, and then we met in Seattle and got jobs to Juneau. And we were with the War Department, and I had a really neat job with the War Department there. It was what was it called? Juneau Port of Embarkation. And at the port, they were in charge of all of the army in all of Alaska. And my job, and Lois too, both of us worked at the same place. We were cryptographers, which means we would have the messages come in on the teletype to the army from, mm-hmm, other places. And then we would decode those. Because you see, in war years, you cannot just have them going over the airways. You cannot just
And
have.
These were from civilians or from other military personnel?
They were from other military bases, you see.
Oh, okay.
And they were information, you know, vital information. So we decoded. Every day we would have a different coding business.
Mm-hmm.
So we just played games all day. We would take the teletype messages. We would decode them. We would send them to the port, and then the officers there would encode their messages to go back, you see. So it was just, it was fun. It really was fun. But this was when the war was coming to the westward. Later on, Kodiak was the place where, that was the headquarters for all the western push. But at that time, when we first came, it was Juneau. So we stayed there only a few months, and then we were told we could transfer to Excursion Inlet or to Fairbanks. And she and I both went to Fairbanks. And so we had worked there for a little while when we came down here. And then I just simply didn't go back to my job.
Yeah. Right.
And she didn't either, for that matter. So that's why we came here. And later on, I did work here after my marriage. I did work for the Navy. Mm-hmm. Out here at the base, but I didn't do cryptography there. Mm-hmm. But I did for a while work there, and then the children started coming along. We had right. The three of them.
Right. So at the point that you came to Kodiak and met your husband, do you remember what was going on at the time?
You mean
as far as the war effort going on in
Kodiak?
Well,
as I said, we went from Juneau to Fairbanks simply because it had come to Kodiak, all of this naval activity. Mm-hmm. And it was just getting more and more so. Now, what happened by the time that we got here, which was a few months later, we weren't in Juneau too many months, we weren't in Fairbanks too many months before we made this trip. Mm-hmm. So, what happened when I got here was that they had gone through this period of fear of the Japanese coming over and bombing. They bombed Dutch Harbor, of course.
Right.
They never bombed Kodiak, but this they didn't know.
Right.
So they had advised civilians to pack up their wives and children and send them out back stateside. And there were all kinds of houses that were just empty because they had gone along with that recommendation. Mm-hmm. So when I came and I got married, I certainly was not going to leave my new husband and go away. Mm-hmm. And in the end, there wasn't any
reason to.
There wasn't any reason to, no.
Yeah. So now you were here then during the periods where they were doing the blackouts and having lights shining out at Middle Bay and having everyone turning their lights.
To one extent, but we were coming closer to the end of the war. Now, we had our first child in 1945, and she was born in June, and the war came to an end then. So a lot of the things that I heard were more what had happened rather than what was actually happening. Some mm-hmm. of the things, it was true, though, were happening at that time. Mm-hmm. But, for instance, I did not come when they were sending out the women and children. That had already happened. Mm-hmm. I was here when those houses were empty and when people, sooner or later, they would start looking for a stove or something, and pretty soon the houses were just a wreck.
Right.
So it was sad that those people had to leave.
Right. So do you remember where you were, or if you remember hearing about Kiska and Attu being attacked? Or either of those two battles going on?
Yes, I heard about them. In those years we had papers. The base had papers, and there was all of this that was going on all that time, mm-hmm. you know.
Sure.
So I was, naturally, this was what was going on in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And we had the submarine base here at one time. Maybe you didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
My husband was here. He was not a Sims Drake man. The Sims Drake people were the ones who were the company mm-hmm. that built the base.
The what people?
Sims Drake was the name of the construction company that built the base.
Oh.
And there were many people who were up still building the base when I came.
Mm-hmm.
Most of it had been done, however, and Swede was not a Sims Drake man.
Mm-hmm.
He was a civilian that worked for the carpenter shop. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So where were you then when the earthquake and the tidal wave occurred, then later on after you'd had your children?
Yeah. Well, by that time, they'd grown up.
Yeah.
And
they were all, had left home or were...
Well, no, that's not quite true either. They had the oldest. We had three children, or we had three children. Beth is the oldest one, and she was off at college.
Mm-hmm.
Bonnie was in high school, and Robert, who is our youngest, was in grade school at the time that we had the earthquake and the tidal wave. And we had, all kinds of things that we did when the tidal wave came. For instance,
did you get an early warning, or
well, actually,
were you surprised?
What happened was when we had, you see, we had had so many of these. You know how there are earthquakes around here quite often. So that particular time, it was a very strong earthquake, but it was not.
So are you saying there had been other tremors in that recent past?
No, not
past
recently. But you know how you have shocks around here.
Sure.
Often. All right, this was a very strong shock. We were at home. It was I was teaching at that time. Mm-hmm. It was Good Friday, and we were just about to sit down to dinner when these great tremors came.
And you were where?
We were at home.
You were home.
We were going to eat.
Yeah.
And, so I can remember calling down to the neighbor down below and saying, no, she called us. And she said, do you think they will still have bowling after all these tremors? And we said, well, we didn't know because we weren't going bowling, but she was thinking about it. And she said, well, I am going to go down. And we will see. Now, at that time, the Elks Club was, it was right across the street from where the Ways would later come in. In other words, it was not where it is now. It's still pretty close to the water,
mm-hmm.
but at that time, it was right across the street. It was not a building that was built above ground level. It was built... It was just a basement,
mm-hmm.
and that's where people went to bowl. And when they did that night, there was a lot of breakage, glass breakage,
mm-hmm.
because they served drinks down there, too, you know, in the Elks Bowling Alley.
And this was just a result of the tremor.
This was because of the tremor.
Yeah.
And so when Ellen said... I'm going to go down there. Why, we knew where she was. And later on when things got worse, my husband said, I'm going to go down there and tell Ellen, who has this new car, to turn it around, because if it really does become a tidal wave,
mm-hmm.
she will probably lose her car. I mean, things are going to happen fast.
Sure.
And she did, and he told her she moved the car and saved the car, because they were not aware that anything was happening until it just came up silently, but it came up across the road, started dripping right down into their basement.
Oh.
And, of course, everybody ran out. And the cars that were pointed that direction and had not been moved as hers had been, they just simply lost their cars because it was that fast.
And you had a feeling there was going to be a wave just because of the size of the tremor?
Yeah. Well, it was a possibility.
Yeah. And were there radio broadcasts announcing that everybody should go to high ground? Or?
There were broadcasts that said that here... It had happened in Seward,
mm-hmm.
and in Valdez. You know, these were the places that were hit first.
Sure.
So it just made sense to go ahead and get out of a place like that.
Where were you living at the time?
We were not too far from here, on Mission Road.
Oh, okay.
And we had a two-story house.
And you were not above high ground, I take it.
Well, what they now consider ground that you shouldn't have anything lower, you know, than what is it, 100 feet?
100 feet.
100 feet. This house where we're now living is not 100 feet. The house where we were living before would have been 100 feet. And so we were on high ground, but the talk was not at that time about that, you know, 100 feet level. It was just talk about get out of here and get high. So people went across, you know, where the school is now. Mm-hmm. That was considered all right.
Sure.
And people went up there, and the waves came in. We watched from there, and there were people who were saying things like, this is the end of the world, and so on and so forth, mm-hmm. you know.
And were people bringing lots of their worldly possessions with them, or was it just go
they
now?
They didn't have time.
Yeah.
There wasn't any of that. There wasn't time.
You had to go right now.
You just went.
Yeah.
And
so were all of your family members present and accounted for to make the trip up there?
Well, we went just to the school. We did not go up on the hill. A lot of people went clear up on pillars.
Sure.
Know? But that's where we ended, was there. And as I said, we had just the two children, so
mm-hmm.
Who were here at that time. So it was off at college. And there was a time that it was reported that the whole of Kodiak Island had sunk. And that's the report she was having. Actually, she wasn't at school. She'd gone off on a skiing trip to Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
And it was through friends that we finally got in touch with her about 2 days later. Communication was very hard there for a while.
Mm-hmm. So did you happen to know anyone then that was affected adversely by this? In other words, did you know anyone who suffered a loss of a family member or personal property that?
Well, before we get off on that, let me tell you a funny thing that happened. At that time, we didn't live on the water as we do now. The house was about a block from the water, and you could see the water, but we weren't right on the water as we are in this house.
Mm-hmm.
And so when people came, many people stayed that night at the high school. And Svea was one off to college. Bonnie was the one in high school, and she worked with the food because they gave food to everybody. And we also knew something about the clothing situation. And I can remember one time, it was about 3 or 4 days after all of this had happened, we sent boxes of clothing to Yuzinki, and that very same day we got clothing from Yuzinki because they had heard about our need as we had heard about their needs. So our boxes of clothing just kind of, you know, went
crossed in the mail.
Went across. But the funny thing I was going to tell you about was when the tidal wave came, and here we were up on the school grounds looking at it, the water would be sucked completely dry in the channel. And then it would go around some neighboring islands and come back. And that's right. You would just look down there. And we had a friend who did not go up on the hill, and he saw all of these little clams sticking up their heads. And he loves to go clam digging. So he got his little bucket, and he got his little clam shovel, and he went down the bluff and started out to dig his clams. People were, you know, it was a sort of a crazy time. But at any rate, he hadn't gotten very far, and he heard this tremendous roar, because what had gone out was ultimately going to come back. And so he could see way, way in the distance this wall of water. He lost his clam shovel. He did not lose his bucket, and he did not lose his life. But he just ran up this hill that he would never be able to at any other time, you know. But he did. He just went up that bluff.
Oh, wow. I can't believe he thought he was going to be able to get down there in time to get goodies and get back.
Well, he wasn't thinking very straight, but I think most of us weren't thinking too straight. So,
actually saw that?
Oh, of course we saw. And then afterwards, there were the aftershocks. This continued on into Sunday. That people, it came on Friday, but there were aftershocks on Saturday. And on Sunday, it was beginning to get to people. I mean, you know, they were pretty, not exactly blasé, but they were taking it in stride. But about on Sunday, I noticed people were beginning to think, oh my goodness. It was kind of like in California, but they had aftershocks for weeks, and I think even months, whereas we had them, as far as I remember, they ended that Sunday after the Friday. And after it was all over, we did not have any phones for a while. We did not have any kind of communication. There was a paper that was put out and distributed. But I can remember, for instance, in our household, we had a brick, sort of like an outdoor fireplace. And we would put water out there to boil because, you see, we didn't have electricity, and we who had electric stoves, there we were. So we had that for the whole neighborhood. The whole neighborhood came and cooked on that outdoor brick kind of a thing. And that was good. We had it. Now that, I think, is going to be these people.
This way you can keep eating and salt your food at the same time, huh? Yeah. One time free.
So how did fishing impact your family at all?
What are we talking about? In my own family, not really, no, because my husband was a carpenter. He never fished.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, even sport fishing he didn't do.
Oh,
Rob and Bonnie, two of our children, are the fishermen in the mm-hmm. family. But the people that are here tonight are Danny Olson, who is a fisherman.
Mm-hmm.
So it has very much impacted your life. So this is Danny and Hilda Olson.
Mm-hmm.
So are we supposed to say something now?
You're supposed to say whatever. Like if she asks questions and you want to, you know, give
Please
input.
Do.
Isn't that what you want to do?
Absolutely.
Okay. Mm.
But this is
and
your interview.
But we are just lucky. We have not just me.
We're interviewing folks that know something about the history of Kodiak, which certainly I wouldn't qualify because I was born in 66 in Juneau, and I didn't get here until 69. So
yeah, right.
So then the biggest impact from fishing then on you would have been what, the decline in the 70s?
Gosh, I was...
Or when did you start fishing?
Started,
or how long have you been fishing in Kodiak?
I started fishing probably when I was 15 years old, and I'm 51 now.
Mm-hmm.
Fished during the high school years, just the summer mm-hmm. salmon.
And that would have been starting in what year then?
Mm. Probably 59, 60.
Okay. And then at what point then did you become a boat owner, or did that become your mainstay for survival?
I think when I was about 26 years old, I became a full-time fisherman, you know, after I went a couple of years to college and found that fishing had more romance, probably more excitement. And at the time, it appeared to be more lucrative in terms of, there was a lot of frontier in the fishing then. This was a time when the crab was in its heyday, you know. They mm-hmm. harvested 90 million pounds of crab, and then I experienced those years. And then when those began to decline, the boat owner that I was fishing with, Oscar Dyson, I fished with him for 4 years. We went into shrimp fishing, and we experienced that from the very beginning pioneering days till its heyday, when mm-hmm. till it collapsed.
Yeah, and that would have been in the 80s then?
No, before that. I think it was, unless your interviews with other people say it's the 80s. I don't seem like.
Well, that's just my dad. His experience at Fish and Game, there was at least some decline in the 80s, but certainly, I'm sure, previous to that, it was on its way.
Yeah, well, when it collapsed, there was about four real good years of it. Maybe a total of six or eight that made up the fishery, I think. I don't know. What's the Fish and Game document say? But I know when we were fishing, you could tip the net down for more than 20 minutes. You fear it would catch so many shrimp, you couldn't get it back aboard. And you're talking of 20,000-30,000 pound hauls, and there was no limit, you know, how large of a net you could tow. You'd fill it up. And there could be boats like in the bay just down from town, the closest one around Chiniac is Ugat Bay. There'd be as many as 20 boats or more making a circle in that bay, and they'd do it day after day for months on end, and bringing in up to 100,000 pounds a trip. No thanks. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's some phenomenal stories on. And every fisherman that fished that time could tell you those heyday. But now we don't have a shrimp fishery.
This is true.
And we don't have a king crab fishery. And we don't have a tanner fishery.
This is true.
But we're going to be the cod capital of the world now.
Yeah, that's right.
Bill tells us.
Yeah.
Have you interviewed Bill? The Buccaneer Bill?
Pardon me?
Have you interviewed Bill?
Oh, no.
Not yet. Huh?
Not yet. No. But so that, then shortly after the decline in shrimp and crab, then the fisheries have started to shift then ever since to ground fish then?
But for every fisherman you talk to, he's going to have a little bit of twist of story to tell you what happened, what caused it. Mm-hmm. Same with Fish and Game. Because I was with Guy Powell for one summer, and he swore up and down there would never decline the king crab as long as he was managing them.
Is that right?
As long as we had a size, sex, and a season, which seemed to have merit, didn't it? I mean, if you only took the males and you only took a legal size crab mm-hmm. and always threw the females back, why wouldn't you keep having king crab?
Right.
Forever.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
But Danny, she's just lucky that you're here. Because you see, she would have asked a question like that and got nothing mm-hmm. from me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you have another side of the story to tell, see? Notice everybody has their story.
Well, yes, but that is a question. She's supposed to ask, evidently, these particular questions.
No, I came up with all these on my own. There is no set questions.
Oh.
So then.
But Ruth is a pioneer in her own way in the education field. Now, there's.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, we talked about that. That's mm-hmm. all fascinating.
Did you work in Little Red Schoolhouse on the Hill?
No. The Little Red Schoolhouse was out the bay. Oh, the what one
was the
at
the one in the little Quonset, the other little red one where
no.
Mr. Schott was it? Or Mr. Gray?
That was the downtown school.
Remember Mr. Gray going down the hall?
That was No, I don't remember, but
you
I
You don't remember?
I don't know Mr. Gray.
You know,
it was before
see,
her
there
time.
Was,
there
before
your
was time. A
time.
When I came here, I had children.
She's recording this.
This is fine. Well, that's all right. This is what she wants.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was cooking when she was doing
this. Oh, yeah. We had stir fry going.
Yeah. So, I had the children at home. When I had the kids, I really wasn't involved in teaching at all.
Oh.
You see. So you're talking about your school days, which were...
Mr. Gray.
And
Mr.
he was
Shaw.
At the downtown school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I don't know Mr. Gray.
How many years did you teach in the district?
20. And I retired.
But not all together?
Actually, I didn't. I taught 19 because I brought in with me one year from when I first got out of college and I taught in Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to Washington, D.C. when the war came on. And then I came up here with 1 year. But I taught 19 here and retired. Yeah.
And were they 19 continuous years, or did you stop for a brief time while you had your children, or you hadn't
no.
started then?
No, Thea came first. Mm-hmm. Bonnie came second. Let's tell her about
the
Solomon's birthdays. Okay, Thea was born on the 16th
of
1945. Bonnie was born.
What month?
The 16th of June. Mm-hmm. Okay. 16th of June. Bonnie the next year. 15th of June. Rob 5 years later, the 14th of June. See, consecutive, I mean, we
this
were just going backwards.
Yeah. So you had birthdays then on, starting with the
14th, 15th, and 16th. Three consecutive birthdays, you see. And the sisters out here, you know, the sisters have been here a long time, the Catholic sisters. And they came when the children would have a mutual birthday, which was good when they were little, you know. You could just say, we're going to have it, say, on the 15th. And we'd have all three birthdays.
Mm-hmm.
But once they started school, that was no more.
Right.
And, fine, thanks.
I'll cut that in just
a second. Yeah, I'm just fine.
All right.
So does that mean then your children all grew up Catholic?
No.
No?
They aren't Catholic at all.
Oh, okay.
It's just like now at the hospital now, who is it? Not Nazarene, Lutheran? What is the... The man that has something to do with the hospital board. I don't know, but it has nothing to do. They were born in a Catholic hospital.
Oh, you mean the church that's behind the hospital? Isn't that Minnesota or something like that? Was it not the church? Isn't that hospital I thought was owned by a corporation in?
It is owned by a corporation.
I think it's Lutheran.
And it might be Lutheran background. I just don't know. But no, we are not Catholic. But the sisters have always been wonderful. They would come to the kids' birthdays. And they still had their long gowns, robes in those days.
Right. That's neat. So then, what did you think when all of this logging and stuff began in Afognak? Did that impact you at all, or do you remember what your thoughts on that were? Did that affect your husband's work at all?
No. He died 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. When did the logging start? How many years ago?
Oh, boy, you might know that better than I would.
I'm not a logger.
I would imagine when that started, it probably created somewhat of a stir, didn't it?
I don't
know. Or maybe not necessarily.
Not necessarily. I mean, it didn't impact my life.
I think some of the fishermen began to get concerned about it when they started logging, and they were concerned about the streams being impacted by, you know, fallen trees and obstructing the path of migrating salmon and polluting the waters. Mm-hmm. So that's always been an issue. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that's escalated as they continued to move into areas that they kind of indicated, well, we're not going to do that. And once they get their foot in the door, they seem like they begin to grab more land to harvest.
Mm-hmm. So what did you think when you read that article in the paper about them putting a spaceport or a launch site out at Passagjack?
I went out there the night that they had this meeting with the... they were considering two sites, if you remember. And they had a meeting out at Chiniac. Mm-hmm. And the people, there was an astronaut who came with the group, and it was after potluck, and there were quite a few children there, school children as well. And so we listened to what they had to say. I didn't think that there was a lot of negative feeling, but there was some in Chiniac, and that's why in the end, they chose not to go to Chiniac, but to the other place instead. Plus, it's a better site, really. Don't you agree, Hilder, Danny? Don't you think so? Because it's more over the water.
I think so, too. Yeah,
less impact on the environment.
Yes.
Because there's less trees.
It's removed from the surrounding community. There's no, other than a large ranch there.
What were the two choices? Right out at the end there on Narrow Cape,
or the Burton Ranch area.
Oh.
You know, you've gone out there, and you have gone to Fossil Beach.
Oh, sure.
All right, that's in the area.
Mm-hmm. Well, I thought you were talking about Chiniac itself being one of the areas where the settlement is.
Well, That was one of the propositions, yes. And they did not particularly want that, the Chinook people. They thought it was too close to them.
Well, sure.
And so they decided, just practically that evening, that they would not have it in Chinook. And then it came out in the paper not long after that they had chosen the other site. And there is a good map of the proposal. Where did I see that? A map of their proposed buildings and so forth. Have you seen it around someplace? Okay. It's on a door. Oh, yeah. Some public building. I don't think it's out the college.
Is the borough, maybe?
It could be, but I can't say that I've noticed right offhand.
It might be at the borough, but there is this one so we can see what it's all about. Thank you, Hilda.
Mm-hmm. So does anybody remember anything about fox farming?
Oh, that was before us. Now,
well, now, there were still some isolated spots around the island where they were still doing that, weren't there?
We know a lady that knows quite a bit about fox farming, though, that her father was the first senator of Alaska, Al Owen.
Mm-hmm.
And
you should talk to Dean McPherson.
Her maiden name was Owen, D.D. Owen.
Mm-hmm.
And she spent, I think, one year or more living on Mormon Island, and they raised a fox on that island.
Huh.
He's got quite a story to tell, because he rode a boat from Marlott Island to town, I guess, to catch a plane to go to Juneau.
Oh, he did.
Legislation session.
Yeah.
And that would be quite a journey. Middle
yeah,
of the
it certainly
time.
Would be.
Even in the summertime, it would be a journey, but come wintertime, my gracious.
You know, this technological center over there on your island is named the Al Owens. Mm-hmm. This is who we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And he
right.
was a legislator back in those days, a neat man. And the one that Hilda was talking about is his daughter.
Was Dee Dee born here in Kodiak? You know? Hilda?
Yeah.
Huh?
Now she can talk.
Well, I don't know. Her lips may be sealed for some reason.
Her dad delivered her. I don't know where he delivered her.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Hmm. So now
I always say, yes, this is the one I delivered. I remember it all.
Yeah.
So now, was your daughter with Hilda when the earthquake occurred, when they were staying up at the high school when the tidal wave came?
They lost a house. They were downtown. You know, I was talking about how the water came and went into the Elks. They were very close there, and they lost their home. So I don't know what her experiences were.
Where was
were.
Bonnie our senior year?
She was here.
She was gone her junior year.
She was gone her junior year.
And we
she
were in typing class. No, that's when Kennedy was shot.
Huh.
It was 5:36 when the tidal wave hit. And we were at home eating dinner, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
And you probably were eating dinner too.
Yeah.
We were just ready to.
Mm-hmm.
So what did you do from that point? Were you starting to hear broadcasts and you'd already felt, you felt this tremor, and then so what happened from there?
Oh, the house was shaking so bad. My aunt said, you better eat because we may not eat for a long time. And it started shaking so bad, she said, get outside. So we ran outside, and it shook and shook and shook. And everybody in the neighborhood was screaming and crying. And after it quit shaking, my aunt said, go back in the house and eat. Again, she wanted us to eat. So we had peas in a pot, potatoes. And I picked up my potato off my plate. And I went to the living room, and I looked out the window, and I saw the water coming in, and it was busting all the pickets off our fence. The tidal wave was just coming in, you know, slow seeping. And they said, okay, everybody get out of the house. And we're not a drinking family. And my uncle goes up in the attic to get his marine duffel bag, and my aunt goes in the pantry to get us something for sustenance. And we meet in the truck, and we drive up Pillar Hill, and
so you saw the water coming, and you still had time to do all of this.
It was a seepage.
Slowly.
It was just a seepage.
Oh, okay.
It wouldn't come in.
It wasn't
this.
A big
no,
yeah.
It just
okay.
was just flooding like the bathtub fills up.
Oh.
And my uncle opens up the duffel bag because there was snow outside and everything, and we thought, oh, Black Spike is, and it was full of his old golf balls. And my aunt brought a bottle of cooking sherry, so he had a duffel bag of golf balls and cooking sherry on the mountain.
Oh, my God.
My sustenance for you. Now, how many of you were in the house at that time?
There was, I guess, myself, Guy, and Yvonne, and Uncle Van, and Auntie. And then we had, all night long we were up on the mountain. And my uncle worked for Standard Oil, and he had to take off, and he was afraid of the town burning after the tidal wave if the pipes were pulled out of the tanks.
Mm-hmm.
So he took off to go turn the tanks off, and one of the waves came in, and he was trapped down there, and he was standing on top of a car as the water was coming in. And my aunt went looking for him, and she told me to stay at the Baptist church with my little sister in the car. And I didn't know what a tidal wave was, you know. I didn't know how high it would come, and I was really, really frightened. I thought I wanted to get away from that town as fast as I could. But she told me to stay there, and I stayed there with Bonnie. And she went down, and they found a little skiff floating by, and she got in it, and she got down to the Standard Oil area, and Uncle Van and her got in the skiff and were able to get back to dry land after he turned the pipes off, you know, all the fuel pipes. And then they went up the mountain. I had taken off because I thought they were so long, I figured I had to get out of there. And I left with my little sister because I thought we'd be gone too.
And you were how old at the time?
I was 16.
Wow.
And we went up Pillar Hill.
How did you get up there?
I was in the truck.
Oh, so you were, you could drive at the time then.
And we went up there, and they looked for us all night. They had the hospital ambulances up there, and everybody was in their night clothes, and it was something you just can't imagine. Where your priorities are, all you're thinking of is a human life. You're not thinking of all the things that you're losing, you know.
Mm.
But
when did that realization come?
Well, my brother was missing for 3 days, and we thought he was dead. And we were all in lines at the police station waiting to check on who they had found, because they had found a couple of dead people in our neighborhood. And, thanks. 3 days later...
No, thanks for them. No, you're just going to move your plate on.
Oh.
There we go.
I thought you were going to put pie on it.
Well, she did.
Oh, I don't want anything. Thanks.
This girl's a grosser.
But Guy, her brother, had the most interesting story. Tell about Guy and his experience.
Well, when the tidal wave hit, we had a boat down in the channel. And he went down to untie the boat. And when the wave came in, he... couldn't get back to shore. He was stranded on one of the floats out there. And there was a fisherman going by, and they saw him stranded on one of the floats, so they put him on the fishing boat, and they went out to sea for 3 days.
Oh,
so
gracious.
He was out there, and we didn't know it. And on the third day, we were standing in line. Here he comes whistling up.
Standing in line for?
At the police station looking for missing persons.
Oh, gracious.
He comes up there. Oh, that was fun. I had so much fun. He says, oh, I'd kill you if we weren't so worried about you.
Oh, man.
We worried about him so much. And that was his attitude. He was just...
He had a good time.
Yeah, that men love challenges, you know?
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yes, it's too bad, really, you missed all that, because it was an exciting time.
Wow.
Of course... Sad or something.
You got here in 69?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Then I was only 3, so my memories aren't all that good until at least 5, that's right.
I think the tidal wave maybe we're not forced to deal with that kind of stuff, to maybe you lose a loved one in your family and you see what your real priorities are in life. And it's people, it's not the material things you gain throughout your collection time.
Right.
And we are just all so thankful to be alive, and as much as we were mad at my brother, we were happy with that.
Mm-hmm. So where were you?
I was in the service.
West Point, I think.
So you missed all of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Did you have family here that you left behind?
But their home was quite high, on higher ground, and so they just had a, the experience of viewing the ebb and flow of the water through the channel, I guess, which was pretty spectacular from what people said. Did you see some of that, Ruth?
Well, actually, no, because we lived on Mission Road at the time. We were too far away from the water. But they were right up, so they could see. But then when we went up to the school, we saw this, you know.
But was it dark by that time, though? Or?
Well, it was getting darker and darker.
5:36.
And you were up on the hill that night, and we were at the high school that night. And we had, you know, because our house was much higher than, say, Potato Patch Lake, and we had gotten some of the people out of the Potato Patch Lake place. They were afraid to go back to that house because it was low-lying, you know. And I can remember how the third night we talked them into coming to our house, and I said, I will stay up tonight and I'll watch. And so they did. They came and they went even upstairs because they were afraid. And I remember I stayed up all that night and I kept looking down. Lost 5 pounds. I've never been able to lose 5 pounds in a few days. But people didn't think, as she said, you didn't think much about food. You would grab something to eat occasionally, but that was the least of your thoughts.
Right. So you were there Friday night until?
We were there Friday night until sometime in the middle of the night. And I couldn't sleep. And so Sweet and I came home. And we stayed then, from then on, in our own home. But there were these people, you see, that were staying, that had lost their homes or were just scared, and they stayed. They slept all over the building, the high school building, and then they, in the cafeteria, fed everybody.
So was it at that time then that you came home, people were still saying that that was dangerous and that you shouldn't because something may recur?
Some of them were just so frightened, they just had to be lured back into homes. And particularly that one family I'm thinking of, they had several children, she was pregnant. It was not, I mean, it was terrible staying there with...